Judy Hess, and we're just saying, this is our program that airs the second and fourth Friday of every month. And, of course, here we are at the fourth Friday. Your hosts are Mimi Kennedy and Judy Hess. I have to share with you today that we're going to be missing Mimi. She had an event that she absolutely had was unable to change. It's a long-term commitment that she had made, and so it's us, and so you can just help me with the show, listeners. We are going to have a marvelous show today. We're going to be focusing today on a very special event coming up this Sunday in Los Angeles, and that is that Senator Bernie Sanders, independent senator of Vermont, will be joining us in Los Angeles. And, of course, as you know, PBA has been working very hard to convince Senator Sanders to run for president as a Democrat. And he has been appearing in, and been going to many, many places, but particularly Iowa and New Hampshire. So that sounds pretty good. And we'll be able to encourage him ourselves this Sunday. This will be a marvelous event. It is Sunday at 2 p.m. in Los Angeles at the American Federation of Musicians, Local 47. And it's located at 817 Vine Street in Los Angeles. There is a suggested contribution of $25, but no one will be turned away. Along with Senator Sanders, we have wonderful guests, Trent Lang on the California Disclose Act, Elizabeth Warren on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and that is Elizabeth Warren of People Demanding Action, and David Braun on the fight against fracking. So it will be an exquisite event, I think, on Sunday. You can RSVP to attend at BernieSanders.com. And just go to the events and you will see the LA meeting at 2 p.m. Click on that and you can RSVP as well. What's really very, very special about this is that this past week we would have celebrated our wonderful founder, Tim Carpenter's 56th birthday. And so I do want to say, Tim, presente. And Tim, this is a great birthday present for Tim because it was his dearest hope that Senator Sanders would run for president as a Democrat. And months before we lost him, he began a petition to encourage Senator Sanders to run for president as a Democrat. So this is just so very exciting. Sunday is the very first PDA-sponsored Bernie Sanders event. And as I said, Bernie will have with him on stage these wonderful guests, Trent Lang, Elizabeth Warren, Liz Warren, and David Braun. And this is very exciting because they'll be discussing the subjects that are important to them. But what's exciting for me is that we have these three special guests on our show this morning. And we will be joining, they will be joining us in just a few moments. As you know, Mimi and I usually do a few minutes before we have our guests on, and it's basically what's on our mind. We're just saying, you know, this is what we're thinking. And so I do have a few things on my mind. Just very recently, Representative Keith Ellison, co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus and representative from the state of Minnesota, I believe the 5th District, reintroduced his bill, the Inclusive Prosperity Act. And this is my favorite, most favorite bill in the whole world. And the reason I say that is because it makes it possible for us to, in the U.S. to do things that we need to do. What it is a financial transactions tax. The bill number is H.R. 1464. We also call it the Robin Hood tax. And that bill calls for a very small financial transactions tax on Wall Street trades, particularly out of the big institutions, and essentially will, if enacted, provide somewhere around $300 billion with a B dollars every year into U.S. coffers. That means that in our treasury, we would be able to convert to green energy, put many, many people to work, doing green energy, rebuild infrastructure, again, more work. Our infrastructure is totally crumbling, and we need this desperately. It would help with health care and many other areas. As Keith said, as Representative Ellison said on our roundtable most recently, just as he was dropping the bill, you know, we say, well, we can't afford Head Start, we can't afford food stamps, we can't afford preschool, we can't afford health care, we can't afford anything. We're such a poor country. Well, no, he found the money. The money is on Wall Street. So we know where the money is, and just a tiny, tiny bit of that money could make so many things possible. So we're certainly hoping that you're going to all support, I am especially, Keith's H.R. 1464. Hope you'll write your Congress members, call their offices, and so forth. Ask them to co-sponsor this bill. And we'll be on our way to having a magnificent employment picture. Employment is not quite as it is described in our official documents. And the reason I say that is because there are so many hidden unemployed persons and underemployed persons. So we can put America back to work with Keith Ellison's H.R. 1464. And I just have one more thing. Well, actually, I have a lot on my mind. As you know, Senator Harry Reid, you may have seen, he has announced he will not run for re-election. And so that creates quite an opportunity and a challenge in the state of Nevada for us to elect a good progressive senator in that state. So we have to put that on the shelf for just a few moments and get to work on it when we take it back off the shelf, not long from now. And we must elect a very progressive senator in Nevada. One final thing on my mind, and that is Citizens United. Citizens United, as you know, allows corporations and everybody else to donate untold amounts of money, the Koch brothers, and so on, so on, so on, and to campaigns. And this is a true devastation of our democratic system. So we need a constitutional amendment that says corporations are not people and money is not speech. And in the Congress in the last session, we did have such bills introduced, and I'm certainly hoping that they'll be coming up soon. One of them was introduced by Rick Nolan from Minnesota's 8th District, just on, you know, kind of down the road from Keith's district. He introduced in the last session H.J. Res 29, proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the U.S. And basically, it was corporations are not people and money is not speech. We also had a joint resolution put in the Senate last term, S.J. Res 19. Unfortunately, we had it was introduced by Tom Udall, but we need to have another senator introduce that bill into the Senate. So we have a lot of work to do. And the reason I bring this up is because this isn't going to happen tomorrow. Constitutional amendments take a long time. Not only do they have to work their way through the Congress, but then they have to be ratified by, I believe it's three-quarters of the states. So it takes a very long time, and so the states are going to have to take action. And what we're looking for is that each state take responsibility, the citizens in each state take responsibility to make sure that they are doing what they are able to do in order to mitigate the damages caused by Citizens United as we work on a constitutional amendment. So with that in mind, let's make sure that we are all working in our individual states toward that end. And we're going to have, in a little while, Trent Lang speaking with us about the California Disclose Act, which is one such measure which can help us with that. I'm going to check with the green room and see, do we have Trent on the line? Mike, can you tell us? Okay. So now what I would like to do, we do have Trent coming on, but I'm not hearing that he is on the line. So what I would like to do is to introduce another guest on the program.
Hello.
Oh, Trent, hi. How are you?
Hi. Hi. I'm very good, Judy. I was here, but I didn't know if you could hear me.
Oh, okay. Welcome aboard. Well, I can hear you now.
Great,
we all
great.
I can hear you now, and that's just wonderful. And so I just wanted to tell our audience just a little bit about you, and that is that Trent Lang is the president and the chair of the organization which has brought forth the California Disclose Act, getting money out of politics. And we are very, very proud to have him on the program. We're very happy to have you, Trent. And basically, let's see if we can't just kind of flesh out what the California Disclose Act is about. You can talk about it in any way that's comfortable for you. Some of our listeners may not have any idea what it is because, of course, we're broadcasting all over the country, well, all over the world for that matter. But not only that, even some Californians may not fully understand. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to bring you to Trent Lang, and let's talk about this. So, Trent, what's the California Disclose Act?
Well, thank you very much for asking. Thank you very much for having me on the show, Judy. And you really do a great job of outlining the terrible problems that we have with unlimited money in campaigns. And the California Disclose Act is meant to address the biggest thing that all that money is used to do, and that is to buy political ads on television, on radio, stuffing our mailboxes. And part of the problem is that people get fooled because basically, all those ads purposely deceive people pretty much about who's paying for them, who's behind them. The California Disclose Act would work here in California to solve that problem for the huge problem of ballot measures, changing them from having fine print disclosures at the bottom of the screen that say paid for by Stop Hidden Taxes or Californians Against Higher Healthcare Costs or Californians for Healthy Puppies and Happy Children, which is the kind of names that they have on them, place that with a big, bold, clear, black background disclosure on the ads that say show the top three funders. So a perfect example of this was a proposition that was passed in California a few years back that had really devastating government effects because it made it impossible to raise fees even on polluters without a two-thirds vote of the legislature or city councils or anything like that. And it passed because people spent $18 million behind a group called Stop Hidden Taxes. that sounded good. Who's for hidden taxes?
Right.
But what the Disclose Act would do, what AB 700, the new bill, would do is to have shown who was really behind it. And in big, bold print on a black background, it would have said, top funders of this ad are Chevron, Philip Morris, and Anheuser-Busch.
Ah, yes.
A completely different picture of who's trying to buy your votes. And when you look at propositions like that, that sometimes pass with only, 51, 52% of the vote, it can make all the difference in the world whether these devastating propositions are passed or not.
Yes, indeed, it can. You know, so basically what the Disclose Act is pulls the covers back and shows exactly what's under them. Now the voters are going to know, Chevron wants this thing passed. I wonder why that might be, and I start thinking about it. And then
exactly.
I realize, oh, gosh. So, all right, so talk to me about, and tell us all, if you would, the mechanics of this. This is an assembly bill right now, right, in the California Assembly?
That's right. It's just been introduced. We'll have to go through the Assembly and Senate. We'll be expecting to have our first hearing on the bill probably in late April. Some of the language details are still being worked out as we talk with stakeholders and so forth. But it's a bill that will take lots and lots of activist support to help push through first the Assembly and then the Senate and then on to the governor's desk if all goes well.
Right, exactly. And so it would become law the minute it is signed. It's not a referendum or asking the legislature to put it on the ballot as an initiative or a referendum. It is strictly, it's a straightforward bill that we're backing at this point.
That's correct. Although there is the possibility that it could have to go to the ballot. The way any bill in California that amends the Political Reform Act, the disclosure laws that we currently have, works is that you have to get a two-thirds vote for the legislature and the governor to pass it into law right away. That's one of the things that actually makes it very difficult it's a pretty high hurdle to pass laws like this that would really improve disclosure. So there is the chance that if we cannot get a two-thirds vote, and it's very hard to get two-thirds vote, then the legislature could put it onto the ballot for the voters to decide. Though hopefully we'll get two-thirds so it can go into law right away and be in effect next year, which we really, really need.
Oh, do we not? That would be just so wonderful. What groups or organizations or demographics of folks are actually supporting the Disclose Act, Trent?
There's a very broad group of organizations that have supported. Over 400 organizations and leaders supported last year's bill, which almost all the way through made it further than any other such powerful bill has ever made it. And it ranges from endorsers included, not only the California Clean Money Campaign, our organization that sponsored the bill, but the League of Women Voters, Common Cause, the Sierra Club, small business associations, a small organization, the California National Organization for Women, a very broad group of people. And the people is I think the real answer, who was really behind it, because there is a very broad movement of activists that are crying out for disclosure like this. In fact, we have a very broad group of activists in California out there gathering signatures and making phone calls and lobbying their legislators and so forth. Over 80,000 people signed the petition for last year's bill, which is just amazing for any sort of legislation. And we're going to need to build on that, though, to get it through this time.
No question. Now, obviously, the more volunteers, the better. So I know that you have a website, and I know that there's a way to get volunteers to come and help, and I also know that there are many people here in California who would love to help out with this. So would you tell us about that, how to help, how to get hold of California Clean Money, and so forth?
Absolutely. It's very easy. We need people to sign the petitions, and that will get you involved. Go to our website, www.yesfairelections.org, yesfairelections with an S.org. That will have some details about the AB 700, the new Disclose Act, some before and after pictures so you can see how powerful it will be. And go in and sign the petition there right online. You can look for a working group event, different working groups around the state that are going. And if you sign the petition and give your email address, then, of course, we'll tell you when an action is coming your way and when there are ways to help. Because the legislature doesn't want to change as many people in the legislature up in Sacramento who benefit from being able to hide on these ads and keep deceiving, you know, folks. There are a lot of folks who don't want to change. So we're going to really need a good, strong activist push to make the legislature see how much the people are demanding that we have the Disclose Act as a first step to solving unlimited money in politics.
Yes. You know, here I'm in Fresno, California, and here we know all about the California Disclose Act because of one very special activist, Ellie Garabedian, and I bet we could, you know, I wish we could clone her and put her all over the state because she's wonderful.
She is. That's an example. People like Ellie Garabedian in Fresno and Nancy Knapp and Joe Ely and David Schmidt and Craig Dunkley and Joni Eisen in the Bay Area and folks all around, that's what we need. People like them that are out there putting their time and heart into fixing our democracy, because nothing that we care about can make progress as fast as we need to when these ballot measures and other political ads are able to deceive voters with huge amounts of hidden money. And the Disclose Act would change all that, and that's why we need more people like Ellie Garabedian and everybody else and just regular people who just sign petitions and gather a few clipboards and make a few phone calls to help push it over the top.
Absolutely. So, yes, you used the D word in democracy, as in democracy. And, you know, our democracy is getting crushed at this point, and it is by money in politics. It's so serious that in fact, Senator Bernie Sanders says we're basically becoming an oligarchy. And I just wanted to, I'm so looking forward to hearing you on Sunday and being with you on Sunday. I mean, it's not as if it's a long time. No, see, we were together last weekend.
That's right.
at a summit. But basically, it's just going to be wonderful to hear you, to see you with Bernie. And you know, Bernie is such a champion in terms of fighting money in politics. He's just going to love hearing what you have to say. I just got to believe. So I'm sure you're happy about Bernie coming here.
Oh, Bernie Sanders has, as you said, has been a real champion of the need to fix the problem of money in politics, how everything that we care about falls out of it. He's been a big supporter of the National Disclose Act, which this is in many ways modeled off of, and, of course, the National Disclose Act at the moment, until there's a new Congress, probably isn't going to pass, but we can make progress in the states. Bernie's been a real champion of that, and I'm looking forward to him hearing about the California Disclose Act, and I'm looking forward to hearing him talk about all the other things that he cares about in money and politics and everything else.
Oh, I know. It's going to be an amazing event, and once again, I just want to encourage everybody to come here and see Trent and Bernie, and it just promises to be such a wonderful day. And again, Trent, why don't you give us that contact info one more time? I mean, who can they email or contact and say, hey, I'm going to help out?
Okay, well, the website info at YesFairElections, YesFairElections with an S.org to sign the petition and get on there. Or you can email us at info@caclean.org, like CaliforniaClean.org, info@caclean.org, and we'll we'll get you set up and we'll get you connected with your local LA Garabedians in places like Fresno. If you're somebody who wants to take leadership in your own place where Ellie can't clone herself, then we'd love to talk with you there too.
Well, that's marvelous. Well, Trent, I just want to thank you so much for being on the program. You have been an inspiration for quite a while to us, and I look forward very much to seeing you on Sunday.
Well, thank you. I look forward to seeing you, Judy, and I look forward to seeing Senator Sanders and hopefully a lot of the listeners on your show. It should be a great day.
Right on. Well, thank you so much, Trent. I'll see you Sunday.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And now we have another guest, someone that you probably read about when we sent many of you an email. As you know, Progressive Democrats of America now has a sister organization, People Demanding Action. And People Demanding Action is a 501c4. And the Director of Communications and Campaign Outreach is Elizabeth Warren, not to be confused with the senator. Elizabeth is from California, and I know her well. We've worked together. We've been at some leadership events together. So I want to welcome Liz. I'm just going to tell you that prior to joining PD Action, she was a volunteer with Progressive Democrats of America and served as a regional organizer for MoveOn.org. And as I indicated, she is based in Southern California. And a few years ago, in 2012, she read about around the secret negotiations for an important trade deal that was happening. These negotiations were taking place in San Diego. And she vowed to learn more, and what she learned by reading recently leaked texts astonished her. So with that, I want to welcome to the program Elizabeth Warren. Liz, are you with us?
I am with you, and thank you so much, Judy, for inviting me to this call. I'm really, really very excited to tell your listeners a little bit more about the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Wonderful.
And what we are doing.
Well, that's great. Tell us what it is, because some of our listeners, there may be two listeners out there who don't really know what it is.
Well, I would not be surprised if your listeners haven't heard about this, and there's actually a very, very good reason. So before I tell you about it, I will tell you that the negotiating text of this particular trade deal, it's actually been in negotiation since the formative days in 2005. So for more than 10 years, these trade deals have been negotiated in secret. 600 corporations and trade advisors have had access to the text, and it wasn't until about a year and a half ago that even members of Congress were allowed to read it. So if people haven't heard about it, there's a reason. Unfortunately, the White House does not want you to know about it, and neither do the trade advisors or the U.S. Trade Representative or any of the corporations involved. So with that, I will tell you that it is actually a multinational trade deal. Right now there's a dozen countries involved. It's the United States and Vietnam, Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, and Singapore. And they've often talked about the U.S.-Asia-Pacific pivot. This is a deal that would essentially wrap up the economy in that part of the world involving every country except China, which is how President Obama often defends it, as China, you know, dumping everything here and destroying our jobs. And that's sort of the party line that the chambers of commerce are using and some new organizations that have evolved to try and sell this deal to everybody in America. Right now, we are very, very close to getting a vote in Congress on a bill that we expect to see in the Senate introduced the week of April 13th. It is called Fast Track. And what that particular piece of legislation would do would be to take power normally given to Congress to oversee trade deals and transfer it to the executive branch and by extension the trade representative. It would allow the president and the U.S. trade representative to negotiate a deal, wrap it all up, all of the details, and then bring it back to Congress for a very, very quick up or down vote. In fact, it only gives them 90 days from start to finish to pass it through both houses of Congress. It allows only 22 hours of debate in each house and no amendments or filibusters. So essentially, the president presents it as a fait accompli, and Congress pretty much has to go along with it. If Congress votes to give the president fast track, we can sort of say this is a done deal, which is why a number of organizations led by our friends and colleagues at Public Trade Watch have been fighting to stop fast track. Now, let me tell you a little bit about fast track. That is a process that goes back to the Nixon era. And it's often been called, you know, like the greatest thing Nixon ever did for corporations that nobody really realized. It was introduced to help speed this process, and it has been used in the past to sort of slide through deals under the radar, things that would never, ever get through otherwise. And so the goal that we have as activists and as organizations representing consumers and workers in America and other countries is to stop fast track from happening. I'll pause there in case you want to.
Yeah, and so what we want to do is stop fast track to make sure that it just doesn't become a deal without the people actually having their say so through their legislators. Another thing I understand, and I do want to get into what the Trans-Pacific Partnership does, but one of the things that I have known and understood is that if you're a member of Congress, you can now look at only summaries of this agreement, which has, I believe, something like 29 sections, only five of which deal with trade. And they must go in, they're not allowed to take notes, and they're not allowed to tell anybody what these summaries say. And they don't know what the actual language is of this deal. So basically, they are under obligation to keep it secret, as you said, Liz. I mean, it's classified. So
precisely.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit about some of the major things that have been leaked about the TPP.
Okay. And what I'll share is you're absolutely right, Judy. It was only recently that members of Congress were allowed to read it, and it was made very inconvenient for them. And I think you and Trent and you know everyone involved knows typically how members of Congress get informed about an issue is they have legislative aides who will research something for them and provide them with all the necessary information and help them stay abreast of all current developments. By making this secret, it basically says to the member of Congress, you must sit in a room with someone watching you. You're not allowed to have notes or, you know, take copies or anything, and you have to read these thousands and thousands of pages of text, and you know, you basically have to have taken the Evelyn Wood reading dynamics course if you want to understand it, because you can't even, you know, take cheat notes. So yeah, they've made it so that Congress essentially has to vote on something without even really understanding what they're voting on. So it's kind of a silly sort of thing. Problem that we've had is that even the members who are allowed to read it aren't allowed to discuss it with anyone, you know, who isn't cleared, and they're not supposed to tell the public. Alan Grayson, one of our good friends and allies, was one of the first allowed to see it, and what he basically said was, I'm not allowed to tell you, but what I have seen, I can tell you is really bad. So he at least offered a qualified, this is bad, but I can't tell you why, a little while ago. Part of the biggest thing that we're concerned about, and it sounds really, really wonky, but it's called the investor-state dispute settlement mechanism. And it's one of those kinds of things that sounds like it's a good idea in theory, but really opens the door for corporations to do some terrible things. What it does is it creates an offshore tribunal of corporate attorneys who sit in revolving positions. They will sometimes represent countries, they will sometimes represent corporations, and they will sometimes sit as judges in sort of, you know, serving as arbiters of disagreements between nations and corporations. This system actually allows corporations to sue countries whenever they feel their profits have been hindered by some law that that country has in place. For example, environmental protection laws, worker rights, you know, things like OSHA, the minimum wage, you know, basic safety standards, food safety, water safety, anti-fracking laws, GMO labeling laws. You know, in other countries, you know, tobacco labeling laws have been challenged. You know, access to affordable medicine. You know, there's very strict copyright kinds of laws that are attached to the investment chapter that have been discussed that essentially give, you know, corporations the right to go in, especially big pharma. And this is about something I know Dr. Bill Honigman, who is, you know, PDA's medical representative, has been very concerned about worldwide. They can jack up the prices on AIDS medication, things that people need for basic life. They can control the price worldwide. And what this represents, and our friends in organized labor, we're working very, very closely with the AFL-CIO, the Teamsters, Communications Workers of America, and other unions. And I might say our Sunday event is actually at a union hall, you know, the American Federation of Musicians. The unions are very concerned about this, not only because of the worker rights, but also because of the very kinds of things that these corporations can do in terms of sending us on a global race to the bottom. What corporations can do is they can run around the world shopping for the lowest level of regulation, the lowest paid workers, you know, the most corporate freedom, and essentially kind of, you know, nation shop, and then bring everything to this tribunal and say, this is the flywheel, and we will have no choice once this thing is in place. It's one of those great corporate coups, and if we do not stop Fast Track from happening, the American public won't even have an opportunity to see a debate in Congress over this.
Right, and basically, if we take it into, let's just pretend now that a multinational corporation, ABC, wants to frack in a place in California where fracking is forbidden by law, and basically they say, okay, we want to frack in this location in California, and we project that we will actually take out $47 billion in profit from that operation. However, this location doesn't allow us to. So now what they do, the multinational corporation sues the United States in these tribunals to say, you are blocking us from fracking in this location. Our estimated receipts from the operation is $47 billion. So now pay us American taxpayers' money right out of the U.S. Treasury and compensate us because we can't frack there. And we know there's all this oil in the shale there, and you have to pay us. And as you described, Liz, then these tribunals, made up mostly of these corporate, multinational corporate attorneys, are supposed to give a fair hearing. And again, big D word, democracy, or small d, whatever you want to call it, here we go with democracy going down the tubes because our own Constitution can't help us. And what I mean by that is, there is no court in this land that can do anything about such an award. You cannot be the district courts, the circuit courts, even the Supreme Court, incapable and powerless to change any award that is made against American taxpayers. So
you're right,
what happened to our Constitution?
You are absolutely right, Judy. And that is actually why this has created an across the board coalition. We have folks that have joined us, you know, from the Tea Party who are outraged by this. We have folks, you know, from the far left to the far right, because this is really an American issue. This isn't a partisan issue.
Right.
This is an everyone issue. And these corporations have, in fact, done it in the past. As revealed by the Public Citizen leak text, and I know I'm running very close to time here, so I'll sort of wrap because I know we need to share some websites. But I'm going to direct folks to look for the information, the leaked text that came out this week about what we expect to see in this investment chapter, which tells all the wonky stuff you want to know, but $3.6 billion has already been ordered in compensation under previous trade agreements. The same sort of language, only worse, is in this one. So we do know that.
Yeah. That's a drop in the bucket compared to what the TPP will do.
Oh, exactly. This is really, they say NAFTA on steroids, that's been the phrase, and it really is. I mean, very few people know how many awful things happened with NAFTA because it's, again, not in the news because it's been kept out. We're in a war of words, by the way. We need to get the word out about what's really happening and sort of counter the spin because, you know, they are really working hard to convince people it's great. A couple places people can go.
Right.
www.citizen.org/trade. So Public Citizen Global Trade Watch is www.citizen.org/trade. PD America has our own site where we have a map. You can click on your state, see where your representative stands. We encourage people to reach out to their representatives between Monday and Friday, April 10th, when they're back home in recess. Reach out to your reps, urge them to vote no on Fast Track. They want to go to pdamerica.org/TPP. If you scroll down, there's also links to our Tuesday Twitter storms, which happen at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern every single Tuesday. And they can also visit a site called stopfasttrack.com, stopfasttrack.com. If they click on that site and put in their zip code and area code and basic information, the site gives them opportunity to send an email to their representative or make a telephone call. And the site actually phones you and makes the call for you, so it's all toll-free. They'll connect you with your representative and both senators in your state. So we encourage people to basically do those things. They can also write a letter to the editor through our pdamerica.org/trade page, and we encourage people to do that as well. There's a sample copy of text you can use, and it makes all the arguments for you. All you have to do is click, 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 insert, and sign your name. It'll send it to the newspaper near you. So all those things we encourage people to do between now and the 10th of April. Also, April 18th, there is an International Day of Action. We'll be asking people probably to go around and canvas, and I'm sure you'll be sharing more maybe on your next call with people about that. We'll also posted on pdamerica.org/trade.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Liz. And, you know, I just can't wait to see you Sunday. It's been a while. And so it's going to be really a wonderful day. And Bernie, of course, fights against the TPP. He is absolutely against it. He understands what the problems are with it. So Sunday, I hope everybody will come out and hear Liz and see Trent and Liz and David Braun, which takes me to our next segment in just a second. Liz, would you like to stay on the line for a few minutes? I want to make sure that we have David with us, and I want to thank you so much for being on the program with us. This is just absolutely wonderful. You're so knowledgeable, and you have been fighting this fight with all your heart and soul, I know. I've been following all of your work, and it's just magnificent. So as I said, I can't wait to see you Sunday.
Thank you so much, Judy, and this is our fight. I mean, PDA and PD Action, our new organization, a sister organization to PDA, are really committed to this, and I am just so grateful to have such a wonderful team and so many wonderful allies working with us. We couldn't do this without everybody being committed.
Right. And I would just like to ask our control room if we have David Braun on the line. Stay with us, Liz.
I'm here.
David is with us. Okay, so Liz, thank you so much, and we will see you Sunday.
Thank you, Judy. See you Sunday.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome, David. I'm so glad you're here. And I would like to tell our audience just a little bit about you. So David Braun is co-founder of New Yorkers Against Fracking and Americans Against Fracking. And he's recently relocated back to his home state of California to fight fracking, where he's working with Californians Against Fracking, which is a coalition of over 200 organizations, all striving for a ban. And while in New York, David founded and worked with several grassroots organizations, including United for Action and Sane Energy Project, along with several others, helping to develop the powerful movement which won a ban on fracking in the state. So along the way, David was a grassroots coordinator for the films Gasland and Gasland 2. Most of us have seen them. And David worked with Move On previous to working on the issue of fracking and has engaged with other social, environmental, and economic justice campaigns. David previously was an entrepreneur and ran a very successful for-profit business in New York City. So, David, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me, Judy.
Oh, thank you for coming. So, basically, we're all going to be together with Bernie on Sunday, and it's going to be exceedingly exciting. And,
Absolutely. And so
the topic that you will be talking about, I would guess, is fracking, right?
Correct. Yes, indeed.
Okay. So tell our listening audience, if you would, I doubt if there's anybody who doesn't know what it is, but let's bring everybody up to speed on what fracking is and what it does and what we're doing to get it stopped.
Sure. Well, let's talk about why we're doing it. So there aren't a whole lot of oil and gas reserves or conventional reserves in the ground. And a conventional reserve of oil or gas is when the oil and gas companies drill into the ground, find a pocket of oil or gas, put a straw into the ground essentially, and suck it up. Those oil reserves and gas reserves are long gone, at least here in the United States. And so what they developed is a way to actually drill down into the earth around about a mile and then drill horizontally. It's directional drilling through rock formations and strata. And then what they do is they pump or they set off plastic explosives in the ground, and then they pump water, sand, and on average about 400,000 pounds of toxic chemicals into the ground at very high pressure. In fact, it's about 100 times the amount of pressure that it takes to break the strongest bone in your body, the femur. And they inject this water, sand, and chemical mixture to shatter bedrock to release small pockets of oil and gas from the ground and collect that. Now, these chemicals that they're utilizing, we don't know all of them, but of the ones that we're able to identify, we do know that about 32% cause cancer. We know that about 43% are genetic disruptors. And we know that about 58% are immune suppressants. What we found and what we've seen reported by independent scientists and in various reports that have been done by government agencies, or at least independent government agencies, is that we found that the conclusions have been that these chemicals do migrate into existing, pre-existing faults and fractures and fissures, and they do contaminate groundwater. We've also found that in places like Colorado, that they are detecting air contaminants, toxic, lethal amounts of toxic chemicals a half a mile away from these fracking wells. So, and then, of course, we know that New York State just banned the practice on the basis of health impacts, and with the Department of Health studying the issue in the most rigorous study that's happened to date, or independent study that's happened to date, with the commissioner of the Department of Health saying that he wouldn't let his two-year-old child live next to a fracking well. So this is the industry is calling it new technology, but I call it more of a Neanderthal technology, a bludgeoning and shattering rock to release oil and gas reserves that, of course, are unnecessary because we could be just moving to renewable energy and not having this toxic energy come out of the ground. But that's essentially what fracking is, and that's what's happening. It's a way to make money and reinvent itself for a very old industry whose party has continued far beyond its curfew, and they want it to continue even longer. Public health be damned and climate change be damned. So it's very unfortunate these companies are wanting to continue their toxic enterprise. It's understandable because this is their bread and butter. Unfortunately, it runs headlong into conflict with our interest of, you know, developing a sustainable planet, curbing climate change, and protecting communities from toxic air contamination and poisoning water.
Yes, indeed. This is just absolutely daunting. It's very scary, actually.
It is.
As you point out, it uses a heck of a lot of water to do the job. And then what it does is it dispenses all these toxic chemicals into the groundwater, if in some instances. And then our communities are poisoned. So, I mean, here in California, because everybody by now knows now that I live in Fresno and we're in the middle of just the worst drought. And basically, we're getting summer weather now. Most people throughout the state are getting summer weather. And we have had hardly a drop of rain all winter. We had one rain, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And our everything, all our entire water supply is down. And these oil companies want to suck up all kinds of water. How much is it, like a minimum of 400,000 gallons of water to do one fracking well?
I think that's something like the average of what we're seeing reported. Of course, not everything is being reported. We're finding that there's a lot of discrepancies between the mandatory reporting site. We're seeing wells show up on the industry website, which is a volunteer website that isn't on the California state mandatory website. So we don't know all what is going on, but what we do know, it is pretty daunting. And also what we are able to analyze is that oil industry in the state of California is using about 2 million gallons of water per day for fracking and other extreme energy extraction, like acidizing, when they pour hydrofluoric acid, which is, of course, worse, more lethal than hydrochloric acid, directly into well bores to melt away rock, right? So they're using all these different toxic technologies to just try and pry out this oil out of the ground. That's what they're fracking for in the state of California. And any water, and what that does is that poisons the water, removes it permanently from the hydrologic cycle. During an extreme drought, we are at 12% of our snowpack right now. And here we are, we're still in the spring. It's going to be a really frightening year in the state of California around water. Why would we take any water? I mean, there are communities that are, they're already saying that you're going to run out of water. Why on earth would we take water away from communities or away from people or that need this water, that need it to live, water being the source of all life, and poison it and permanently remove it from the hydrologic cycle so that it's poisoned and then injected into the ground? Now, worse, what we're finding is the Brown administration here in the state of California, their regulators are currently actually allowing the oil and gas industry to utilize injection wells. In fact, 500 of them, where not only are they poisoning that water and then injecting that 2 million gallons of water into the ground to permanently remove it from the hydrologic cycle, but then they're injecting it into clean drinking water aquifers that are protected under the Safe Drinking Water Act. And so they're now poisoning aquifers with this toxic water that's coming out of the ground from oil and gas production. So not only are we poisoning the water with the fracking, but then with the injection wells, they're poisoning even more. And in a state that has a drought like this, we'd really like to see better leadership from the Brown administration to tighten that up. He's doing so many good things around renewable energy, but boy, this is just wholly irresponsible for the people and the water and the state of California.
Right. And we haven't even mentioned earthquakes.
Yeah, you know, and there's another one. I mean, Oklahoma, we're seeing that the injection wells are tied to earthquakes in the state of Oklahoma. Ohio, they're tying earthquakes to fracking. In England, we've seen the same thing. And so why would we even play with it in the state of California? They're still collecting information, but they're treating people and they're treating the state as if they were lab rats in a fracking experiment. And, you know, it's just absolutely ludicrous. I mean, why, you know, frack first and ask questions later? We should actually be putting a moratorium on it. We should better understand this issue. What we're seeing is the evidence that we have right now certainly isn't pointing to very good things. But why would we play with a, all life, you know, depends on water. All life on the surface of this planet, you can't have giant earthquakes and expect life and business and everything else to continue. How is somehow the oil and gas industry more important than all of the other businesses in the state of California that could experience catastrophic loss from earthquakes? And where you're pitting one toxic industry that could, you know, cause utter catastrophe for all life itself, you know, in the state, it's just absolutely ludicrous. We should not be fracking first and asking questions later. We should halt the fracking now. We should study the heck out of this issue, and we shouldn't make Californians the lab rats in this fracking experiment.
So well put. I mean, yes. I feel like a lab rat. Most of us do.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
And once you have that totality of the money in the elections, and then you have the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is going to make it such that it's a deterrent to have anti-fracking legislation in your locale because of the taxpayer impact. And then you have the fracking itself with all of those impacts. If you put it together, and it's just a total Democratic nightmare. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we have to appreciate a guy like, you know, Governor Andrew Cuomo, for who said, he came out and said, you know, I think he was a little suspicious at first of the anti-fracking movement. But clearly, as his scientists and his health department started really looking at this issue, he evolved on the issue. And so that's what we're really looking for our other progressive leaders, like a guy like Jerry Brown, to do the same thing. It's, hey, Jerry Brown, you know, yeah, sure, the oil and gas industry has been working in California for a number of years. They're fairly established, and they're a very big, powerful industry. But, you know, be a leader of the people. Really look at the science here and evolve, because, you know, people are not lab rats in a fracking experiment. And now more than ever, we need guys like Bernie Sanders. We need guys like Andrew Cuomo to stand up and do the right thing in the face of industry having so much power. If we don't have leaders to take us out of this darkness and out of these terrible things that are happening all around us, the future of this planet is in peril. And so now more than ever, we need strong, progressive leaders to stand up and take a stand on the right things. And so we can, you know, definitely herald our progressive leaders to do that, but they're really few and far between at this point.
Well, tell me, give me information on how our listeners can reach Americans Against Fracking and Californians Against Fracking so that we can get everybody involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, because when we started working on this issue about 5 years ago, and there were people that told us that we weren't going to win in New York. There were environmentalists that told us, with big environmental organizations. And we
right.
thanked them for the opinion, and we fought like heck anyway. And, you know, and we're seeing it play out, right? So sticking by your guns and organizing around that to protect your communities really does pay off. And people taking action and people power can win. We saw that happen in New York. We're going to see it happen in California. We're going to see it happen all over the United States. So that's why we formed Americans Against Fracking. We're stronger in coalition. Americans Against Fracking has tons of organizations all across the United States. You can go to the Americans Against Fracking website. It's AmericansAgainstFracking.org. You can look at members. They're organized by state. You can find a member organization in your state. So that's one way to get plugged in. Another way to get plugged in is right now there is a bill in Congress that's been introduced by Representative Pocan. It's a ban on fracking ban on federal lands so that there's no fracking on all of our federal national treasures. And so you can actually go online and look for Food and Water Watch or Friends of the Earth. And they are doing actions that will be joined by other partners and other organizations as we continue to move that legislation forward. You can look at, if you're in California and you want to find out what's going on, go to the Californians Against Fracking website. We did a big petition delivery yesterday to Governor Brown, calling on him to pass a moratorium and better study this issue. And so you can go to the Californians Against Fracking website, CaliforniansAgainstFracking.org. And if you want to contact me or have any questions or are looking for direction and how you can get better involved, please email me. And you can do so by emailing me at organizers@CaliforniansAgainstFracking.org.
So those are some ways that
people plug in. And, you know, I think the most important thing is that we communicate that, you know, these corporations seem like they're powerful, but people power is bigger. And we have a responsibility. All of this is happening on our watch. This is our world. This is our planet. And this is our children's future. And so we have a responsibility to say if something's bad, we have to put action behind it. We can step up. And what we've seen in New York is that that stepping up, that taking action, those people who are willing to take ownership for their state and their planet and their community, they can win. So we can win. This is not a lost cause. And so we shouldn't be disparaged. We should know that leaders like Bernie Sanders are leading the cause for us, but they need support too, and we need to give that to them. Same with Jerry Brown. He wants to do the right thing, but we got to get there. We got to support him and remind him that we're watching and we're taking ownership and that money doesn't talk louder than people power.
Amen. Well, thank you so much, David, and I can't wait to meet you Sunday. We'll all be together at this event with Bernie. And so I want you to know how grateful I am that you were on the show. Thank you, David.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me, Judy.
See you Sunday.
See you Sunday. Look forward to it.
Okay. And to everyone, I hope we'll see you Sunday, too. And I just wanted to reiterate that this event is happening in Los Angeles Sunday at 2 p.m. The doors open no later than 1:30. It's at the American Federation of Musicians, Local 47. That's at 817 Vine Street in Los Angeles. There is a suggested contribution of $25. Nobody will be turned away. And you can RSVP for this event at berniesanders.com/events. So I just want to ask you to come and join us 2 weeks, the second Friday in April 8th, for our next Just Saying. Hi, Mimi.